welcome back to another episode of Justice League Revisited. We're so glad you're with us. We're so glad you're enjoying the show. Unless, of course, you're a first-time listener, then just welcome to you. Hopefully, you're a fan of Justice League. That's how you found this. Maybe a friend recommended the podcast to you, and you're checking us out. The good news is you've got a bunch you can go back and listen to if this is indeed your first episode, because we've been doing this since Secret Origins. We go chronologically in original air date through the episodes of Justice League. And when I say we, I mean not only myself, but my wonderful co-host, the voice of Wonder Woman, Susan Eisenberg. Hello to you.
Well, hello. Hello, handsome. How are you?
You know, getting by. Beats a poke in the eye with a sharp stick, as they say.
Who's saying that, James? Really? Who's saying that? It's good to be here. Today we have a friend of mine on, which I'm very excited. And we're going to be discussing Night of Shadows, which I hadn't seen in a really long time. And watching it again, I remember lines and it's just so enjoyable revisiting these shows. I can't tell you. I mean, I'm not one who watches the show regularly, so when I've gotten to revisit them, it tickles me because I remember being in the room, and I'm excited for today's show.
As am I. This was a good one. I've never been. I like the science, the swords and the sorcery stuff, but I've never been like this. Like, ooh, like full confession. I've never watched Lord of the Rings. So it's just one of those things that seems exhausting to get into. So I'm excited.
If we get into confessions on this show, I mean, it'll just last forever because I also have never seen Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
and
see?
I have not seen most of the things that most people listening would be like, what? So, yeah. So let's move on,
okay,
shall we?
Moving on. But we are covering A Night of Shadows, which is a very swords and sorcery episode. This was the 10th story overall, episodes 20 and 21 in their original airing order of the first season of Justice League. We have no Superman, no Green Lantern, and no Hawkgirl, but there's plenty of other characters in this as well. This episode was directed by Butch Lukic, written by Keith Dameron. Part 1 dropped on September 20th, 2002, with Part 2 coming a week later on September the 27th of 2002. And I mentioned the cast. Morgan Le Fay shows up, which would give Lord Hades a run for his money, voiced by Olivia Dabo. We have her son Mordred, voiced by Soren Fulton. We have Myria, Jean's past wife, voiced by the incomparable Pam Grier. We have Jason Blood, otherwise known as the Demon Etrigan, voiced by Michael T. Weiss. And I love that we have Professor Henry Moss, voiced by live-action Alfred Michael Goff.
It's a great cast. I mean, so impressive. Every cast is, not that I would actually say, well, that was a dud, because I would never do that. But
you said Patrick Duffy was horrible to work with. You told me that off camera.
You know what? I love him so much, and I'm just trying so hard to get him on this show. So if anyone out there knows Patrick Duffy, please have him contact me, because I'm trying to contact him. It's just Olivia was such a force in this episode. I just dug her. And I like the magic and the mystical quality to it all. I just found the castles, and I found that really fabulous. I mean, maybe because I'm playing the sorceress. Maybe
that could be a little foreshadowing.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, yeah, I loved it. So and then we have our guest, you know, so I think this should be a good episode.
Before we get to our guest, I have to ask, in a throwdown between Morgan Le Fay and the Sorceress of Grayskull, who wins?
Oh, I don't think it's even a contest. I think the sorceress takes her.
Clearly.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. I mean, not even a contest.
Plus, Man-in-Arms would just hit her little brat of a kid with one of his ice beams. No more Mordred.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, like, not even a question. Yeah, that would be a good thing to, I'd pay to watch that. That's good pay TV.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that would be good. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. No, I think I would, I think the sorceress. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. No question. I mean, with the cast of characters you've got behind you, could just send in Ram Man or Orko, and you know, you'd have a backup for it. It'd be a good fight, but I'd still like to see it. But and we'll,
thank you.
We'll,
all right.
We may have to ask our guest about that, too. And, of course, joining us now, writer for Marvel, for Image, for Dark Horse, a Hawkgirl series for DC. We'll get into some of that later as well. We've got Erica Schultz on the show with us talking about Night of Shadows. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I know Susan was especially giddy because we talked off air before we started. You're in another circle of hers because we're eight degrees of separation from Susan Eisenberg, all of us.
Exactly.
Well, and also I wanted a female voice on this podcast. We need more female voices. So it was like when we were thinking about people who are in the know and people who are fans of the show, I was like giddy when I came up with the idea of having Erica on, right? And I wrote you and I said, I have somebody for us. Darn it. We're going to ask Erica Schultz to be on.
Because and I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, well, how long have we've known each other? A long time. We met through, how did we meet?
We met through Twitter originally, right, but then we met in person at San Diego. And I remember I was waiting in line or something and you had bumped into my husband and you came over and you gave me a hug and you pinched my cheek and you said, you are adorable. And I swear to God, I felt that pinch for like the entire day. I was like, Wonder Woman pinched my cheeks. So, yeah.
Wow, that was so forward of me to pinch your cheek. I apologize. That sounds awful.
Don't apologize at all. And Amazon graced me.
Yeah, you know, we had so much fun at San Diego Comic-Con. I mean, we were running around. We had our little like haunts, you know, where we would have, where everyone meets up and sees everybody. I mean, some of my best memories of that con involve you and AJ and cookies.
Yeah.
AJ is Erica's husband and he is a baker extraordinaire. I mean, seriously. I mean, he's not just like, yeah. So it was his thing where they would always have cookies for people as gifts. You know, if they came by the booth where Erica was working, there was AJ with like, and this became a thing. And, and then like, and then you became, you got used to it. And then you were like, where are my cookies? You know, like, and if the cookies weren't part of it, there was like a little bit of disappointment.
He sends me with cookies. He sends me places with cookies.
Right. Because who doesn't want a cookie? That's the best intro ever.
And he does like gluten-free and he does like all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
James, the next time you're at a Comic-Con and Erica is there, put in your order. That's all I'm going to say. And we'll leave it at that.
All the gluten, please. I like all the stuff that's bad for you. So fill it with gluten and chocolate chips and I'm good.
You got it.
So we're doing Night of Shadows here. Okay. So we all have notes for this episode.
Yes.
How long has it been since you saw it? Because you're a fan of the show. That's one of the reasons
we met. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Right. Huge fan. That's one of the reasons you're here. And that's how we connected on Twitter initially. Yeah. So how long has it been? Because I know you watch the show. It's not like, you know, you put it away 20 years ago. You watch it.
I have all the DVDs of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. And then it went online and it was on Netflix for a while. So we rewatched it on Netflix and now we have HBO Max and we were rewatching it on that. And I do like a full rewatch of all the seasons probably once a year.
Wow.
So it hasn't been that long since I saw it. And I was like, oh, it's, and it was funny because I remember the first time I saw this episode, I was so surprised that Etrigan wasn't rhyming.
Yes.
That was one of the things that he did a lot in the comics is he would rhyme. And, you know, the only rhyme that he does is when he goes from Jason Blood to Etrigan. He has the incantation. That is the only rhyme.
It was off-putting.
And then I don't know if it was off-putting, and I'll tell you why. It wasn't off-putting for me simply because I think some things work in comics and then other things when you go to seeing it actually play out in front of you, it's a little weird. So I think the non-rhyming thing actually kind of worked. And I also think it worked because this Entrican was really snarky and really kind of like biting with his attitude. So I think that it actually worked that he wasn't rhyming because you took him way more seriously, especially when he was like telling Batman, like, I don't trust Sean and everything. So, yeah.
He was such a jerk. I mean, I really, he was such a jerk. I just wanted somebody to just
punch him.
deck him.
And you did.
I mean, I think at one, I know, I know, but like that's where Wonder Woman and I completely on the same page. Completely, totally. So it wasn't that long ago. So you saw this episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I rewatched it, you know, 2 days ago just for the podcast.
Okay. So beyond the rhyming, which I find fascinating because I'm not a comics person. So I didn't have that expectation. And so I didn't, you know, that's like, oh, really? He rhymes? Yeah. I didn't know anything about that. So beyond that, like, what were your takeaways as you were watching the episode?
I felt so awful for Jean mm-hmm. the whole time, simply mm-hmm. because he and Etrigan just like almost he taunts him with this yes. idea of like that witch is in your head and I don't trust you anymore, because there's a previous episode, I believe it is also in season one, where Shiera and Jean are talking and they're on the watchtower and they say, you know, we have the last Kryptonian, we have the last Martian, we have the last Thanagarian, like it's the just us league kind of thing. And so I always thought that that was a great line. And I always sort of had that in my head when it came to, you know, Jean, you know, thinking like, yeah, I mean, he's lost everything. Mm-hmm. And then to have that dangled in front of him and then taken away and then dangled in front of him again. And as strong as he is, it really, I mean, it's heartbreaking. And Wonder Woman is trying to be the strong woman that she is, but also trying to be like a balm for Jean to say to him, you know, like, are you okay? Is everything okay? Because, you know, I mean, Wally's going to be the goofball and Bruce is going to be, you know, the on mission kind of thing. But it was really sort of heartbreaking to see that. And it's interesting because I think Diana has kind of a long fuse when it comes to some people. And Etrigan was just like dancing on the line the whole time, like just trying to get you angry.
Well, like you said, I mean, I think going after Jean is like that's crossing a line for Diana. Yeah. And also, you know, when I think about Diana has so much compassion yes. and she's. Jean is just one of those figures that brings out one's compassion. And the fact that Carl Lumley is such a wonderful, delicious, fine actor, you know, that level, like I thought we just interviewed Carl a couple of weeks, you know, like a month ago. And I thought, wow, this is another Carl episode that is just, he just breaks your heart open. And unlike Diana, who still has her mother and her sisters, Aunt Themyscira, you know, Jean has no one left. And I felt the same way. It broke my heart watching this episode for him. Yeah, it was so, so touching. You put Carl's performance on top of the script that is just like heartbreaking to begin with. And then you have Carl and it's just, it melted me. I mean, I just felt so sorry for him all the way through. And you're right. Flash is going to be Flash. But we all have a soft spot for Jean. I think all the league does. And it's interesting because in real life, we all have a very special feeling for Carl. You know, it's everyone loves Carl. Like if Carl, we all text each other. And when Carl texts us, like everyone just it there's no lag time for response. It's like if Carl texts us, we're texting him right back. And so it's interesting that carries over.
How was it when you were recording this particular episode?
You know, I can't say that I remember exactly how it was because it was so long ago, but I can say that there wasn't a time when I was in that recording studio where I wasn't touched by Jean and by that character and also by Carl Lumley playing that character. And that, I remember that. And I mean, I remember just his effect on the cast. It's just, I think it's that magical experience that happens when the right actor and the right part come together. And they just manage to either break your heart or make you feel alive or, you know, make you feel exhilarated. He just is that. He is Jean. I mean, it's crazy. So I don't remember the specifics other than as I was watching it, I remembered the script and I remembered Diana's sensitivity to him because she always had sensitivity toward him. And like you say, Batman's going to be Batman, you know, Flash is going to do what he does. And I'll tell you who else stood out to me in this episode is Olivia Dabo. Mm-hmm. I just fell in love with her and her interpretation of this character. I remember her being in the room. I remember her. I remember becoming a fan of hers. You know, we all watched her on the Wonder Years. This was a whole other ball game, and she just nailed that performance. And she came back a few times as this character. She was a different character, and then she was this character a few times. I loved this character. I loved there was the little boy in the room, the actor who played her son.
He was tremendous.
I mean, he was so good, so ahead of his time in terms of his sensitivity and playing this character. But I remember Olivia because she just blew me away with this performance. She's really a force in this, and she was so powerful. And that struck me when I was watching the animation. I'm like, geez, she's kicking everyone's ass. You know, like we were all electrocuted. We were all on the floor. We were all getting up. There were how many oofs were there? I mean, it was just a constant barrage of being thrown against walls and on the ground.
No, Superman.
So Diana took every one of those hits.
Superman did not get electrocuted because there was no Superman. Otherwise, we know George would have taken another hit.
Right, because George, whenever George is on, he gets electrocuted. Right. I think that was, I don't know why, but that's just the way it was.
Well, the reason why they didn't have him on is because Superman is sensitive to magic, so.
Right. That would have been, hard to have him in this one.
See, this is why it's good to have you people on the show, because I forget that Superman has an issue with magic, and that's why it's brilliant to have people like you remind me of that. This is where the geek comes in. What do we think about the Hugh Hefner character?
Oh, my God.
What struck me is Wonder Woman, and we've talked about this with Dan Reba and some of the writers, too, that Wonder Woman, especially in season one, is more naive than Hawkgirl. She hasn't been. But this is one I saw her. She was playing that guy. She was using her feminine wiles. And this is the first time I think we've seen that little side of Diana, which I kind of enjoyed. She's like, okay, I know what this guy's after. I'm after something, so I'm going to use that to get what I want, which I thought was a nice change of pace for Diana. It must have been nice for you to play.
Yeah, it jumped out at me a little bit just because it just felt so politically incorrect. And like, you know, like when you hear the sound effects for the record, you know, with the DJ and it's like, you know, and it's just that it just felt like such a throwback. And it's not that far back, unfortunately, but it just felt like such a throwback to things that feel a little cringy to me now. That may have felt cringy to me back then, frankly, but I wasn't able to talk about it, I guess, then. But yeah, I didn't love that interplay. I kept thinking of what it would be like if I had met Hugh Hefner. And by all accounts, he was like, you know, could be a lovely guy and a good host. But, you know, it felt troubling to me, that dynamic a little bit.
And it was a little sophomoric.
It was, and just how he checked her out and just the whole thing and the camera angles on her body. And it just, I didn't love it. But there was a lot of that in the first season, things that would never have been written now. And also, may I add, I would have loved if there had been one woman writing the show. You know, it's just so stark to me when we look at everyone behind the show, it's all men, except for Andrea Romano and the voice cast and the engineer, Kelly. But it was mostly, if not all men, responsible for what we were seeing. And while so much of it is brilliant, I would have appreciated a female voice out there in the writer's room. It would have been lovely to have had that. So long answer to that question about Hugh Hefner, but it did crack me up a little bit to see the house and the mansion and all of that stuff. I mean, it was really funny.
And we got to see Wally just be, you know,
Wally
kind of cringe himself.
Mm-hmm.
His little moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's always like that. You know, it's like when, you know, he has the arm. I always imagine that still where his arm is around me, you know, and, it to me, he's like a younger brother always. But, you know, around other women, you know, he can be a little skeevy, but it's part of the character. He's a flirt. He's harmless. But I just kept thinking while he was like trying to hit on these women, hello, the Justice League needs you. You know, like stop flirting.
We're on mission here, buddy.
Right, yeah. Right. What do we think about Pam Grier?
I love it.
I was shocked that it was Pam Grier.
Me too. I totally had forgotten that. And I was, holy cow.
And may I just say, Pam Grier and Carl Lumley would have beautiful children. I'm just going to put it out there. My goodness, can you imagine?
Oh my God. I mean, I'm trying to think if Pam was there, because I don't remember, to be honest. Mm. And that's something like, it's inconceivable to me that I can't remember that. But when I read the cast list, as I always do before we do our show, I just thought, holy smokes, that's Pam Grier. Unbelievable. Yeah. And just having that voice beckon him like that. Oh, it was just, she was dynamite. Dynamite, right? So good.
And that's the kind, that's the kind of voice, not just the visual of his wife and his children, but that's the voice that would sort of just spark, I have to do anything for this person.
100%.
You know?
100%. Yeah. And then holding his children, the whole thing, so sad.
And then as it sort of like spaghettified, as it like faded away, yeah, that was pretty tragic, yeah.
Oh, woof. Michael T. Weiss. James?
Michael Horton,
do you remember,
wasn't he?
Michael T. Yes, Michael Horton
Days
from
of our
Days
of Lives, yeah.
Days of Our Lives. I love when there's a soap thread. I love when I can connect people to soap operas. So that like me. He was terrific. I mean, he was terrific. He was such a badass and mean, and I hated him, but he was great. Right?
Yeah, doing Jason Blood and Etrigan too. That's playing double duty.
Good.
That's fun.
So good. I'm just looking. So when I got to say, you stupid little man,
I wrote that down. That was the best.
That was fun, right? Right? Yeah. It's so great when we can say lines that we've actually wanted to say.
You just can't pick people up in real life, Susan. That's the only problem.
I know.
You could just,
stupid little man.
You could just get that and toss people.
It's so, when I have to come up against that reality, James, it depresses me each and every time. Because, you know, there's a certain amount of delusion. Sometimes you like, you know, buy into your own, superhero-dom, and you know, then you're like left with like, no, darn it, I don't have any superpowers.
You can still kick him in the shin.
That's right. Yeah. But I wrote that down because it was fun, because I remember that line, and it's fun when I can say things like that. It was like enjoyable. Okay, so what else do we want to talk about with this episode? What, anything else that jumps out at you, Erica, about this episode?
I thought it was very interesting going back to Jean, simply because Jean is one of those powerhouse characters where when you're thinking about his power set in comics, sometimes you think, oh, wow, he's too powerful because he's got the telepathy, the intangibility, shape-shifting and everything. And the fact that he was bested by Morgan Le Fay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the hit on, okay, we're manipulating you, but it's this hit of, you're supposed to be one of the powerhouses, and here I just snapped my fingers and you're now putty in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's also sort of like an ego hit too, when you think about it. Although, I mean, Jean's always the first one to admit when he's wrong. I mean, when Batman wakes up, he admits, you know, and apologizes immediately. And then at the end, he resigns from the league.
Right. Or tries to. Right.
Or tries to. Yeah.
I think what I'm always, and I've said this a few times to James, I'm always amazed at how vulnerable we all are. You know, it doesn't always feel like a sure thing that, I mean, yes, it's a sure thing because we're the stars of the show. So, of course, we're going to win in the end. But
yeah,
it doesn't always feel like a guarantee because we do get our asses kicked so often. And you're right. Jean was the underdog in that fight. I mean, completely and totally, with all his powers, with all his capabilities, you know, she was in charge. She was in charge for most of the show. I kept waiting for her to start losing because she was winning the entire time. So, I totally agree with you about that. And he is the first one to apologize. And was it you, James, who said, who maybe it was you who said he's the most human?
Yeah, we were talking with Dan and Maria, or I'm sorry, Stan and Maria about that one. How it's from War World, how he just, his humanity, you just see it oozing through more than any of the others. For him being the most alien looking, he's the most human of them all.
Yeah, no, I remember that comment, and I think it's so true. Anything else you want to bring up about the episode before I go into my? I want to talk about you, Erica.
Well, I would say this. I will say this. You talked about how you know as superheroes, you're getting your asses handed to you. But I think one of the things that made this show so indelible and so important to so many people, myself included, is the fact that there was true drama. Yes, these are drawings on a page and they're being presented sequentially on your screen, but there was true drama in the writing. There was true drama in the performances. And I think that's why it captured so many people. You know, I mean, I was in my early 20s when the show came out, and I remember sitting in my terrible, tiny little, everybody's first apartment is this tiny little, you know, box of hellhole. Mm-hmm. I had mine, mm-hmm. you know, and I remember sitting there with a friend who was also into comics and just watching this and just being like, oh my God, we get to watch this. And it's not Super Friends, which that we grew up with. This was something that had adult humor, but also was okay for kids, that dealt with real, genuine conflicts, that dealt with real, genuine stakes and emotional moments for these characters. And I think that it really is a testament to the writing, to the design, and absolutely to the performances of all of you. And not just, you know, the seven, but to the performances of everyone else, and especially in Unlimited when, you know, the cast broadened. Mm-hmm. But it really is a testament to you all for doing the work and for making this such an immersive experience and such a heartfelt series. And I think that's why there's so much passion about it.
You know, James, do you see now why I adore her?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean,
right?
That says it all.
It does. And I love that there's such an intelligence for so many. There's such intelligence when people talk about the show. It's such an intelligent conversation. And I feel like it doesn't get its due. And then you have somebody like Erica or somebody like you, James, who brings as fans, you bring so much to the discussion about the show. And I think it's for people who didn't grow up loving comic books or knowing much about it, when I listen and I sit back, and you'll see me all the time, like when you're talking in your geeky way with other people on the show, I just sit back because it's so educational for me to see what you see and to experience what you've experienced and to appreciate the value that you got from these shows or comic books, cartoons, whatever they are, because I didn't have that growing up. That wasn't my jam, if you will. Erica, when you started, when you wanted to become a writer, were there any things that you took from the show that maybe not even consciously, but that you were like, that you feel you've incorporated into your own writing?
I think the fact that Susan and Maria's characters were written so as such strong women. Yes, in that first season, Wonder Woman does have a bit of a naivete, but she has it's more of such a compassion for people that she can sometimes be taken advantage of, or she can sometimes be seen as naive, but she's really not. I mean, you don't survive the mascara by, you know, being a hayseed. And I always loved the interplay between between Hawkgirl and Wonder Woman, because there was this back and forth. And, you know, the episodes that those two characters shined in together were really important. So what I took was, I took that you could write a strong character, particularly a woman, who was strong and yet still had femininity and vulnerabilities. I took that you could write somebody who could literally punch a hole through a mountain and then be the first person with a tissue to wipe somebody's tears. It doesn't have to be, you know, a lot of times women are written, especially if it is a character who's supposed to be, you know, a tough woman, they're usually basically just written as a man in a woman's body. Mm-hmm. You know, they, you know, the spit, tobacco chewing, cursing, whatever, you know, hard drinking, hard smoking kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it just happens to be a woman. And I think that despite there not being any women writers in the writer's room, which in some episodes, like we mentioned, the Hugh Hefner was a little, yeah, okay, it's a little wink, wink for the guys. But aside from that, I think that these women were well-written, and I think that they were well-developed over the course of all the seasons, especially the first two seasons, with it when it was just the canonical seven. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an important lesson. And I think that just showing sequential storytelling, watching a story, watching an arc, and mm-hmm. watching each character have their arc, and watching the camaraderie, because this is a show that has a group. It's not just one single person. And yes, there are episodes where one person will lead or one person will have the focus on them, but you're still dealing with a team. And what I find sometimes when it comes to multiple characters and it being sort of like an ensemble story, everybody can sort of sound the same, only because like you're one person thinking about each person. Mm-hmm. But giving everyone a singular voice, I think, is really important. And seeing that through this ensemble cast, you know, throughout, I think it's a lesson in storytelling. It's a lesson in character, in you know, character development and such. And it deals with, like I said, it deals with adult things like forgiveness. Like when Shayera, you know, after Starcrossed, and Shayera gets, you know, leaves, even though, mm-hmm. you know, technically they weren't going to kick her out, you know, that whole thing of her like staying with Dr. Fate and everything. I mean, that's, you know, having to deal with forgiveness. Like, how do you've been betrayed by somebody who you thought was, you know, your sister in arms, you know, someone mm-hmm. you've done battle with. You can deal with genuine things with people who, you know, run around on rooftops in their pajamas. Like, you can still have these genuine moments,
right?
Even though there's a bizarreness to the situation that they're in.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, it's grounded, you know, and yeah. I think that's the brilliance of the writers. They're just, you know, the writing was so intelligent. And we talk about how everyone did get their story and their special episode, if you will,
yeah.
In, you know, in that first season where it's like, okay, here we go. Here's Green Lantern. And here we go. We're on Themyscira and we're going to hear about Wonder Woman and Diana. And that was so special. You enjoyed, because, you know, we notice how so many of these episodes are part one and part two and maybe part yeah. three. Were you aware when you were watching, like, did you get a kick out of that? Were you aware like, oh, wow, this is continuing? Did that jump out at you at all?
It did, because it mirrored monthly comics. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea that you're telling a story, and in comics, it's usually anywhere, a story arc is anywhere from 3 to 6 issues. So to see a 2 or 3-parter, it made sense, because you would plunk your money down, you get your comic, and then you wait the next month and you'd find the resolution to all of the questions that were posed in issue number one. You find resolution in issue number two. So that I thought was really interesting, because it mirrored the comics in the sense that it mirrored the type of storytelling in the comics. So I thought that that was cool. And also, I mean, it kept everybody running back to the TV set. I mean, right. Let's be honest.
So. Yes, absolutely. So when you're watching this and you were in your 20s and you had your, you know, in your one room apartment, at that point, did you know you wanted to be a writer?
I at that point, I was working at an ad agency doing copywriting and art direction. So I had known ever since I was a kid that I had wanted to do something in the creative field, whether it was writing or drawing or, you know, whatever. But to be honest, I never thought that writing comic books was a job. I always thought that it was just, I thought writing comic books was like being an actor in Hollywood. Like it, mm-hmm. those things just don't happen. So I was working at an ad agency for, the show came out in 2000, 2001, and I had been working at the agency literally like 2 months after graduating college. So summer of 99. And I was writing ads for foot cream and Clearasil and all this other stuff. And I thought, well, you know, I'm getting a paycheck, but I'm still sort of doing something creative. And, you know, and I would write, you know, I would always take a notebook with me and go on the subway. And, you know, my big thing was if I couldn't sleep, I would literally just get dressed at 2 o'clock in the morning, jump on the subway and ride it from one end to the other.
Wow.
Yeah. And I would have a notebook with me and I would see people and I would, you know, I would make up stories about where they were going. Or I would make up stories about, you know, well, you know, are they getting off at the same stop as I am? I wonder if we're going in the same direction, mm-hmm. things like that. And I would just, you know, write stuff down just as an exercise, you know, just to keep my brain sane, you know, and insomnia, you know, in New York in the, you know, early 2000s. But yeah, I mean, I always wanted to do something creative. I just didn't think that writing comic books was going to ever be something that I could actually do.
So what allows you to leave the agency and pursue writing comic books?
Oh, I got laid off.
Okay. Okay. But that forces you to do something next. You know, you have to come up with what's next. I don't want to put you on the spot too much,
but okay.
I know there's so many people that are curious as to how does one become a comic book writer? It's like we get asked all the time, how do you become a voiceover actor? So there are a lot of people who would love to be writing a story for Marvel or DC, and you've done both and are doing both. So can you just share with us a little bit about your trajectory, like your road, you know, who you worked with? I know you worked with Neil Adams. I have a beautiful portrait of Wonder Woman that you got me from Neil Adams. And I remember us going to get it. And it's a beautiful thing. I treasure that piece. Mm-hmm. So can you just, because people know Neil Adams, but can you just share a little bit about what your journey has been? Because as long as I've known you, you have been hustling. And I say that with all deference. You are somebody who knows what you want and you work your ass off to get what you want. And you have a lot of no's in what you do, just like I have a lot of no's in what, like, no, you can't, or no, you're not chosen. And yet you have always just said, okay, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going. So can you just talk a little bit about what your journey's been?
Sure. I mean, so I had gotten laid off and I was freelancing here, there for like small ad agencies in New Jersey. But I didn't have anything really steady. And I had ended up having a really bad car accident and I was recuperating from that. And I was doing a lot of writing from the car accident. And the Neil Adams wife, Marilyn Adams, I had known her for many, many years when I still worked at the agency. And she had heard that I'd been in this accident. And she just called me just to, you know, say, hey, how are you feeling? And I told her, it's like, you know, I'm recuperating. I was like, but I got to be honest, I need a job. She's like, all right, well, we're going to be working on this project. And we need Photoshop artists, we need colorists. And these are all things that I had experience with at the ad agency. And so she goes, can you start next week? And mind you, my arm's in a sling. And I was like, yes, I had a broken collarbone, and I would wear my sling on the train ride into Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And just before I would cross the threshold, I would take it off. I would go in. I would do the work. I was, you know, the project that they had was the Astonishing X-Men motion comic Gifted. And so what we would have to do is we would have to take the comic book pages, and we would have to cut all the characters separate from the background. And then we would have to fill in the background, like redraw whatever the background was and things like that. And so that's what I was doing. And I was doing that for, you know, 10, 12 hours a day. And then I would get back on the train and put my sling back on and go home and take all the painkillers. And so I was doing that, and I was doing the coloring and stuff. And then somebody at the studio said, you know, we need help with animation, with lip sync animation. And I said, well, I play music by ear. Like, I can't read music at all. My husband can sight read. You give him a piece of music and he just like never played it before and he can just play it. But I'm like, well, I play music by ear. Let me give it a shot. So what we would do was we would have the scripts, and underneath each syllable would be a number. And that number would be associated with the mouth shape, whether it was 1 through 6. And so they would give me these, and I would sit there and I would listen to the track, and I would scrub the track back and forth. And I would do and they taught me, you know, which keys to use on After Effects and this, that, and the next thing. And I found that having the numbers there really didn't correspond to the performance. Because sometimes someone will elongate a vowel in a performance. Sometimes someone will hang on something.
Right.
And just having the numbers there and just plotting them in that way, when I would do the playback, it didn't look right. So I literally would just toss it out and say, I'm just going to listen to it. And they didn't like that, because like they wanted to see that I was doing the work, kind of thing. So what I would do is I would, you know, get the scripts, and I would, you know, write the numbers down, and I would put it next to my desk, and anytime some Neil came by, or Jim, who was the studio manager at the time, anytime they came by, I'd be like, uh-huh. Yeah. Oh no, I'm mouth number 6. That's the M mouth. Let's do that. That's a 5. That's a VF. You know, that's an A, that's in one mouth, you know, kind of thing. But, and the other thing is that, you know, and Susan, you know this, there might be something that is spontaneous that happens within the audio session that you don't have written on the script. Mm-hmm. So I'll have the actual script, but as I'm listening to it, oh, there was an extra pause there, or they added an and, or they added a but, or whatever. And that obviously affects it. And it finally got to the point where they just said, okay, we can tell you're not using the paper, but we know it's working out. So boom, do it. And I ended up being the lip sync animator for the entire 6 issues, which ended up being, I think it was like an hour and 10 minutes or something. Hmm. And I had never done animation before in my life.
Wow, that's incredible.
Then this is something that I just happened to do. So at that studio, I mean, we were doing the Astonishing X-Men motion comic. We were doing other motion comics. We were doing advertising and everything. And that just became my thing. I would do the Photoshop work. I would, you know, cut things out and do this. But when it came to the end, to the lip sync, boom, that was something that Erica did. And I stayed at the studio for 7.5 years.
Wow.
And throughout that time, I had started to think in the beginning, around 2009, I started into the end of 2008, around 2009, I started thinking, you know, I've got a lot of stories. Maybe I should look and try and adapt them, as opposed to just prose short stories. Let me try and adapt them to comics. So I started writing a comic called M3, which was a story about this assassin and everything. And I wanted there to be a hardness to her. But again, like we talked before, I wanted there to be a softness and a femininity to her as well. So I spoke with one of the other artists at the studio, and I said, hey, you know, maybe you can look this over, and maybe if you like it, maybe we can draw this. And the artist was named Vicente Alcazar. And Vicente read the script and he said, I really like this. Let's do this. So he drew the first issue and we shopped it around to publishers. And the vast majority of them did not even respond. And then the ones that did respond would say, well, we know who Vicente is. We know he's done work on Moon Knight and Conan and all these characters and Jonah Hex for DC. But we have no idea who she is. So we're not going to give this a shot because she's a nobody. And yeah, I'm not going to lie. That was absolutely disheartening. But I also, you know, if I think something is good and I think something is right, I'm going to fight for it. So Vicente and I said, we're going to do this on our own. And over the course of about 3.5, 4 years, we put out 12 issues on our own. We took them to comic conventions. We sold them on our websites. We printed, we did them on our own. I taught myself lettering so I could letter the books. And I lettered all the books. I wrote the books, lettered the books, did all the graphic design on them. Vicente did all the pencils, inks, and all the colors on them. And then that's what we did. We just made it work. And while I was still at the studio, I would go to conventions and I had gotten the book in the hands of a couple of editors. And that's really what you need to do. So if somebody is looking to get into comics writing, what you need to do is you need to write a script, find an artist, and even if it's a short, even if it's like a 5 or 8 page story, do that and get that into somebody's hands, get it into an editor's hands. There are editors that have tables at conventions. There are editors that will do at the big conventions, like at San Diego or New York. There are editors that will say you can sign up for a critique. And you can sit down and have a conversation with an editor. Like at San Diego, they literally have so San Diego's a 4.5 day show. So they'll have a sign up sheet and you have to go to the big open pavilion where everybody eats. And it's like really open and airy and super bright in there. You go there. And if they're still doing this, I haven't been to San Diego since 2022, but at the time they were doing it, you go and you sign up for, an editor and you sign up for a time slot and you better be there at that time slot, you know, and you go and you sit down and you can have a critique. And that's important. The other thing that I think is important is that when someone gives you a critique, don't just like flip the table and walk away. Just be like, no, forget it. You don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, whatever.
Don't say you stupid little man. Don't do that.
Well, this is the thing. So I used to teach at the Kubert School. I taught writing at the Kubert School for 2 years. And one of the main things is that when you're a creator, you are so close to the material that you can't see the blind spots. And what an editor does is an editor is that person that's one step removed. So they read it and they see the blind spots and they say, hey, I don't see how you connected this to that. And when you turn around and say, oh, well, blah, 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 so-and-so's stepbrother's, you know, evil twin sister, whatever, they're like, that's great. But guess what? If it's not on the page, the reader's not going to know that. They're not inside your head. So you have to make it apparent. If you go to a crit and somebody just says, this sucks, and that's it, and they give you no, you know, yes, notes, then you can say, you stupid little man. But usually a critique is going to say, okay, these are the things that are good. These are the things you need to work on. And here are some suggestions on how you can work on those things. And that's what I think a good critique is. It is constructive and it says, okay, these are your strengths. These are your weaknesses. Now here, let's put you on a path to work on those weaknesses.
Okay.
And I think that that's important. I think a lot of people are so close to the material and they've been working on this book since they were, you know, 7 years old, that any criticism of it is going to be taken as an affront. And I get that. Nobody likes edits. I don't like edits. I literally had to rewrite 20 out of 30 pages of a script yesterday because of a bunch of edits that I got from an editor. Nobody likes that. But that's part of the job. And if you want to become a better writer or a better artist or a better inker or a better colorist, you're going to have to be able to adapt to that. You're going to have to be able to say, okay, this is what they want. This is what I want. where do these two Venn diagram, like where did the circle of the Venn diagram of these two overlap and come together? Mm-hmm. And that's where you got to live. You have to live in that little space. And yes, there's plenty of stuff that I don't want to put in the script, but is kind of an edict. Fine. But you know what? I'm going to do it my way. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find one way or another to put "you stupid little man" in there. Mm-hmm. And actually I might steal that line because the character that I'm working with would probably say that. So I am stealing that line.
So then take us where you are now, like from where you started in the ad agency to today. You have a lot of titles that you're writing. And I mean, do you think it's easier today to break in? Or do you think...
You know, yes and no.
I've watched you from a distance and it's not been easy.
It hasn't even been that far of a distance because I remember crying phone calls to you.
But I have to tell you, that's what makes me all the more proud of your accomplishment is that you never, ever, ever gave up on yourself and your own talent and your own storytelling ability. And I love that you just say yes. Like if an opportunity is there, you're like, all right, I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to say I do. And then I'm going to learn on the job. And that is such a special trait to have, that you just keep showing up and be open-minded. And so, you know, I love that you're having so much success now because, man, did you work hard for it. And I've always said this, boy, are you a wonderful writer. I mean, you are just an incredible writer.
I'm going to start crying. Just to hear you say that you're proud of me just in general is just like, oh, my big sister's proud of me. But I mean, the biggest thing is, honestly, it's the stupid thing of Captain America is they knock you down, you get back up. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the genuine truth of it. You have to keep getting back up. I didn't have, you know, I'm the youngest of three and I had some hard knocks when I was younger. So I will say that, you know, that sort of helped me, mm-hmm. you know, roll with the punches because you had to. And at the same time, I mean, if you really want to do something and you really think that you can do it, then you're going to find a way to do it. Like there's plenty of people that, you know, I think your goals need to be specific. Like some people will say, I want to write comics. All right, then write comics. Nobody is stopping you from writing your own comics. Or if it's, I want to write Marvel comics. Okay, well, Marvel doesn't take submissions. So what you have to do is you have to write your own independent comics. And then once those independent comics are published and produced, then you can get that in the hands of people at Marvel, like editors, like I said, going to crits and things like that, and trying to get them to take a look at your stuff. One of the things that I suggest to everybody is, and this is where I think there are some things that are easier nowadays than before, mm-hmm. is that there are a lot of small publishers that do anthologies. And anthologies are a really great way to break in because they're short stories. You got to write 5 to 8 page stories usually. They will give you a theme and you will be working with an artist. So you don't have to worry about finding an artist on a message board or anything like that. And also you're going to get the experience of having a deadline, working with an editor, working with a letterer, an artist and everything. You're going to get all of that experience. And at the end of the day, you're going to have a book at your table. So you're going to have something that somebody else published at your table mm-hmm. when you go to a convention. And it's a lot of really good experience. So I always tell people, go and, there are publishers that do literally anthologies for every season. Like there's a publisher called Oneshi Press that my friends JL and Lindsay run. And they do at least 3 to 4 anthologies a year. So that's, you know, what's the theme for this anthology? Boom, get in, you know, submit your idea for a 5 to 7 page story or whatever.
And, so and that's, can I just add that, like, I have an agent.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't have to do a lot of the hustling because my agent does it for me. Yeah. And then I just remember you going to just going to all these tables
And like with your book, and like there you were, just so earnestly, you know, just trying to get a leg up.
I was Willie Loman. Willie Loman exactly. Going door to door.
All right, for those of the in the audience who have no idea who Willie Loman is, can we just say it's Death of a Salesman?
Yes.
And it's a brilliant play, and we recommend that everyone read it.
Absolutely.
When as soon as the podcast is over. you were Willie Loman. Exactly. With your boxes and your cookies. But that's the savvy. You know, like, okay, I have a book I want to get around. I want to sell this book. But what's the best way to sell the book? Cookies. Everyone loves cookies.
Everybody loves cookies.
Well, so for the people out there who are listening to this and want to find you, because A, they just think you're amazing. B, they want to know what you're doing and what they can buy that you're doing, or, you know, just tell you that they think you're wonderful and want to follow your journey. How do people find you?
I am on Blue Sky and Twitter. I refuse to call it X. I'm at Erica Schultz 42. And because if you know anything about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, 42 is the life of the universe. That's the number that represents life, universe, and everything. I am on Instagram at Erica Schultz Writes, WRITES. And my website is ericaschultzwrites.com. And I've got all the books that I've worked on, be it self-published or the stuff for Marvel or DC or Dynamite or whatever. And that's all up on there. And stuff. And I will be at Lexington Comic Con March 7th through 10th this year. And then I'm going to be doing some signings for a new Spawn book coming out in April called Rat City.
Yeah, because you do a lot of signings. I see that people can meet you if they're in your locale, which is brilliant. You're working on what?
I'm working on Bloodhunters for Marvel. It is a 5-issue miniseries for the Bloodhunt crossover. So basically everybody turns into vampire and the people that don't turn into vampire has to go after the people that turn into vampires. Oh. So I am writing a team book called Bloodhunters. So I'm writing Bloodhunters for Marvel. I'm writing Rat City for the Spawn universe for Todd McFarlane at Image Comics. I am writing a Daredevil Elektra miniseries that'll be out in July. I'm writing a miniseries for Black Widow. I am working on the second volume of Christabel, my creator-owned book, with Amagoya Aguirre. I think that's it for now.
Yeah, that's enough.
That's there's a Darth Maul one-shot coming out sometime soon.
Wow. Okay, so dream project, Erica. Like you're given all the money and all the opportunity, and what you do with it is what would be your dream project?
Oh, I would love to either do a television series for The Deadliest Bouquet, which was an Image comic series that I wrote last year, or I would love to be able to I pitched a Captain America versus Beta Ray Bill miniseries at Marvel, and the editor loves the idea, but she still says I'm keeping it in my back pocket, but she loves the idea. So I would love to be able to do the Cap versus Beta Ray Bill.
I'm assuming you'd want Walt Simonson to pencil that one for you.
Oh, I would love to have Walt pencil it for me. But if I couldn't get Walt, there's a million phenomenal artists that I've had the great opportunity to work with that I would be able to, you know, tap, like a Marco Santucci or Maria Laura or somebody, you know, really awesome. Because Marco, I know, was working on Shazam. So he's got that cool vibe to him, too. So.
Well, I hope we're putting it out to the universe, so I hope that happens for you. I think that I just congratulate you on all your work and all your successes. They are so well earned, and I think anybody who gets you to write for them is one lucky person, not to mention the audience who gets to read your writing and go on these, you know, journeys with you. So lucky us. And I just love that you joined us today because, you know, I adore you. And And this was so fun because you're a professional, but you're also a fan. So I think
I'm a huge fan.
Right. Yeah. So I think, James, we like two boxes on this one, right? Because we've got the fan, right?
Yes.
I mean, I think well done us, not to blow our own horn, but I mean,
we only have
a high
caliber of guests. Come on. So this is just in keeping with that tradition of the high caliber guest. This has been perfect.
I will say this. If I had all the money in the world, I would do a reboot of the Justice League cartoon, and I would bring back the canonical seven. Obviously, you would have to recast for Kevin for Batman, but I think a Jason O'Mara would do a good job. Or I mean, if you're going for the older Batman, maybe even a Bruce Greenwood. But either way, that's what I should do. I should reboot the Justice League.
See, this is why we're friends.
Yeah,
you know, because #J, you know, JL reunion. Erica was right there. Right there with me, like you, James. I mean, she was right there,
and
supporting it every step of the way.
They just released the trailer for the new X-Men 97, which is they're going back to redo that cartoon. They brought back most of the original voice cast. I don't know why Warner Brothers can't
understand.
Get on board. I don't get it.
Warners, get your heads out of your butts. Yeah. Like, come on. We need this.
Yes. No, I am so glad somebody else is saying instead of just me.
No.
So thank you.
I think that series was so, it was so poignant, and it came, and maybe it's just me, but it hit me at just the right time.
Not right, James? It's not just her.
Not just you.
I mean, you would tweet it and I would retweet it, and it would be retweeted like a bajillion times. So it's not like I'm the only person who's sitting here going, rah, rah, Justice League. I mean, lots of people are. So.
Thankfully, lots of people, lots of fans out there, and couldn't be more grateful to them and for them. So thank you. Thank you for being one of them and for being my friend and for joining us today, and just, you know, adore you, and you just have a good day. And please, please give my best to AJ and to Simon.
I definitely will. And thank you for having me. This was wonderful. It's always great chatting with you, James. It was so nice to meet you.
Likewise.
And I mean, anytime you guys want me back, I'm more than happy. I'm more than happy to come by.
I think that's going to happen, because I feel like we touched on things you're doing, but after reading your Wikipedia page, there's a lot more to get to. So stay tuned for part two of Erica Schultz down the road. Thank you, Erica. We'll talk to you soon. And I just adore you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
There she goes. Very articulate and very well spoken and very clear, clever insights. I liked it.
She's a rock star. And I love that what she brings to the conversation. And I felt like, you know, I wanted you to have somebody to talk to about this stuff, because I mean, I don't bring that to the table. I bring other things, but I didn't grow up with comic books, and I don't speak that language. And she does, and you do, and a lot of people listening do. And so I knew she'd be a great guest, because she's a huge fan of the show, but she's quite accomplished in her own right as a writer and a creator. So I'm overjoyed that she was able to be with us, and also to give her, her wisdom, share her wisdom with people out there who are thinking, how do I break into the business? Because she didn't have connection. She didn't think it was possible to make a living. And now she's got like how many titles?
There are like six or seven coming out soon. It's like, my goodness, when do you sleep?
Right. So anyway, yeah, that was so enjoyable. And it's always fun to have a friend on, because I feel so comfortable. You know, it's not like having people who, you know, I've never met, or it's a little bit, you haven't seen them in forever. I felt very relaxed. And so I may have been a little chatty. I apologize.
No, that was great. I always like it when you take the lead, especially if you know the person better. So that was great. And we got so much great information, because I loved her insights as not only a fan of the show and growing up watching it, but also she brings those writer sensibilities and a comic book writer's sensibilities, which, you know, having a writer on the show, we had not the writer of the episode, but a writer. And those same sensibilities were brought in for this episode and this conversation, which I loved.
Well, and I just, I, I I took away the rhyming. I didn't know anything about the rhyming. And as soon as she said it, you're like, your eyes lit up and I saw you like, you know, shaking your head. And so that's, I love little gems like that, that can be shared here. Because I think as somebody who loves daytime television, I know so many details about my soap operas and their history and the actors and the storylines. And I love when I can meet a fellow soap fan who feels like I do about it and can speak intelligently about it. And we can have these deep conversations. There aren't that many people I know who love it like I do. So when I see people in your fandom who love it, who feel passionate about it and know so much about it, you know, that makes me happy. I want this to be one big conversation about all of that stuff. That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And I've no doubt we'll hear more from her. Because we might have to have her back on for another episode down the road.
Yeah, maybe for Unlimited. You know, when we get to Unlimited in 2027.
Yeah, something like that. We've got some time. We'll ponder it. But no, she'd be great to have on again. And like I said, just her writing sensibilities and that comic book nerd that just married up perfectly together. And just it was a great conversation here.
Yeah, it was. I'm really pleased she was able to join us. And so this is the time where we tell people, please, if you're enjoying this conversation, please subscribe to our podcast. And if you're inclined to leave a review, please do. And because, you know, we read the reviews and we want our numbers to grow and we want to reach a wider audience. So please, please subscribe if you're enjoying the content here.
And you can also follow our social media on Twitter. I think that's the only place that Justice League Revisited lives right now is at OG Justice League on Twitter or X, whatever you want to refer to it as. But that's where you can, if we have guests, we try to put out in advance. So you can, here's the episode we're covering. And here's our guest so that we have listeners submit questions. So you can do that on Twitter as well, which we always encourage because we want that interaction with you, the listener, because that's very important to get that because we're doing this, I'd say 75% for ourselves because we like doing it, but then it's obviously at least 25% for the listeners too.
Well, that's honest. That's honest. And also, you know, James, the account also tells everybody when we have a new episode. Right. So it like lets you know that there's a new episode dropping and go listen to it. And I, Susan Eisenberg One on social media, I always share when we have a new episode. So you can always find it there. And also on my website, SusanEisenbergVoice.com. It also is there. So listen, people, there's no excuse for not listening to the podcast at this point. Okay. We're out there. It's happening. So give us a listen and please give us a review and subscribe to us. Okay. And James, how do people find you if they want to, you know, talk to you?
Yeah. If you're a sadist and you want to inflict me on yourself, then you can always find me on social media at Geek To Me Radio, Geek, TOMERADIO. That's the handle on Twitter and Instagram for our live radio show. We do a live show every Sunday night at 10 o'clock Eastern and 7 p.m. Pacific. And we've got a bunch of guests on, usually in the pop culture field, writers, directors, producers, storyboard artists, voice actors. We review movies and TV shows and things like that. We've got artists and writers on all the time. So feel free to check us out if you're in that pop culture realm. And you can also, if you would go to youtube.com, find Geek To Me Radio there, hit the subscribe button. That way, every time we do a live show, you'll get a little notification of Joey V, my executive producer, is in studio. We go live with video and you can watch us in studio as we talk to some of these fantastic guests.
Fantastic. Wow. Okay. I know. And you've had some really big guests on your radio show. I mean, some really big names. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, we try to get people who I find interesting, but also someone the listener is going to be like, oh, well, that's really cool. We try to keep it very broad. So if you're someone who grew up and you watched the Batman series, we might have Burt Ward on, who played Robin. If you're someone a little younger who liked the Voltron Defender of the Universe, we might have Bex Taylor Klaus on. So you never know. We try to mix it up and get a little bit of something for everyone.
Look at you. Look at you. Well, okay, so another one in the can, right?
That's correct. We've decided that is the correct phrase.
Okay, another one in the can, people. And just please stay tuned because the conversation continues.